Shalom, and thank you for learning with us. Beth Emmanuel relies on the generosity of our listeners to sustain our Messianic synagogue. Please consider a donation to Beth Emmanuel, where Messianic Judaism is more than an idea. It's really happening.
Shemot begins with a powerful account of how the Jewish people survived oppression under a totalitarian theocratic regime. The loss of liberties, the loss of personal rights, enslavement, state-sponsored persecution, and an attempted genocide in Egypt. Embedded within the text are stories of bravery and heroism. The midwives who refused to kill the infants, Miriam the prophetess who rebuked her father for submitting to Pharaoh's decrees, Yocheved who defied the law by keeping and hiding her child, and, of course, Moses who struck down the Egyptian. These are stories about the unquenchable spirit of resistance among the people of God in the face of totalitarian anti-God regimes. They are stories that have inspired generations of Jewish people through centuries of suffering, oppression, displacement, exile, and persecution, and that have likewise inspired Christians who have endured religious persecution since the Roman era, sometimes tragically at the hands of other Christians, but more recently under powerful atheistic regimes acting in the name of the common good, collectivism, communism, and the like. I need to offer a caveat. I do not talk about politics, at least not in the usual sense. I deliberately try to avoid American politics. The tragedy in Minneapolis and the way that woman's death was politicized by voices on both the left and the right is a good example of why I do not use the pulpit to comment on American political controversies or to endorse candidates or parties. This does not mean I am apolitical. It means I am not on either team. Neither side commands my loyalty. I am interested in the politics of the kingdom, which are neither the warmth of collectivism nor the rugged individualism of liberal democracy, but rather a theocratic monarchy, or, to press the point further, a theocratic imperial monarchy. These are the politics that concern me. That said, today I need to speak briefly about American politics because I want to recommend several books that necessarily touch on political discourse. 23 years ago, the community of Beth Emmanuel was formed and launched as an intentional plant of Kehilat Sar Shalom, a Messianic synagogue that at that time met on Ford Parkway in St. Paul, Minnesota, not far from my home. When we began, I can honestly say we did not know what we were doing. I am a reclusive introvert, not a leader by temperament, and I certainly did not have a fully formed vision for the community, except for one thing that burned in my heart. During the years my wife and I spent within the Jewish community, we had witnessed something truly beautiful. A community of people living in close proximity, doing life together, doing Judaism together, observing the Sabbath, the Torah, the daily prayers, and all that goes into an Orthodox way of life. It left me with a profound sense of longing, and it left me asking a single persistent question. Where is the Christian expression of something like this? That was part of it. And then there was something else. I was quite frankly intoxicated by three truths. First, Yeshua is the true Jewish Messiah, like Joseph in disguise, the mystery of the gospel, yet the Jewish people cannot presently see this truth. Second, the Torah is not obviated or canceled by grace, and the church, by and large, cannot see this truth either. Third, the New Testament is thoroughly Jewish and unapologetically Jewish. We had come to the conviction that the Torah should be observed as God's law, that the Sabbath falls on the seventh day, not the first, that Shabbat is the holy day, and that the biblical calendar represents God's appointed times and should be observed as such. Obviously for the Jew, but also for the Gentile because the God of Israel is the God of the whole world. Holding these three truths, the Jewishness of the New Testament, the authority of the Torah, and the Jewishness of the Messiah, we felt that as people of faith and conviction, we were left with little choice but to assemble together. To the outside world, the entire venture may have seemed irrelevant, sectarian, and strange. But 23 years later, here we are. And the very things once dismissed as irrelevant, sectarian, and strange have moved to the center of world attention, of international conversation, controversy, geopolitics, and even end times speculation. Today, people are asking questions for which we already have answers. Who is Jesus? Who is Yeshua? What is Judaism? What are the holy days? And yet, all of these questions ultimately circle back to a single question, the question of the Jewish people. Europeans once called it the Jewish problem. One European, in particular, proposed a solution he called the final solution, shorthand for the final solution to the Jewish problem. At the time, we did not grasp the significance or the weight of what we had stumbled into at Beth Emanuel. But in retrospect, that is often a sign that one is in the right place. Most of you were not with us 23 years ago. At some point, you were born into this community, raised in it, or simply stumbled into it and were swept up along with us. You probably did not know what you were getting into, but you stayed. You committed yourselves to this strange, insular community of faith. It's not like any church I have ever attended, and for that matter, not like any synagogue I have ever attended either, and yet here we are. I often wonder how this must look to people on the outside. Small and strange, I assume. As I have often said before, it's fine to be small, and it's fine to be strange, but you do not want to be both small and strange. A year and a half ago or so, Messianic Rabbi Russ Resnick visited Beth Emanuel to conduct a wedding. Rabbi Resnick is the former secretary of the Union of Messianic Jewish Congregations, a pioneer in modern Messianic Judaism, a member of the Messianic Jewish Rabbinical Council, a contributor to the Hashivenu Messianic Think Tank, and probably many other things besides. If anyone should know Messianic Judaism, I figure it's this guy. So I was curious about his impressions of us. I didn't have to ask. He volunteered them. He said to me, "This is an amazing community you all have built here." He added some other kind words as well. But then he asked me, "Have you read the Benedict Option?" I said, "No, I have not. What is that?" He said, "You should read it. Your community reminds me of a Benedict community." I said, "I'll give it a read." End of conversation. And then I forgot the title of the book. Until more recently, when one of the Drinklings recommended that I read Rod Dreher's 2020 book, Live Not by Lies, a manual for Christian dissidents. Two or three times a year, I go out for beer with two friends, and we spend the evening talking about the Inklings and related literature, C.S. Lewis, Tolkien, Charles Williams, and some of their influences like William Morris, E.R. Edison, and other writers nobody has ever heard of. That's why we call ourselves the Drinklings. On this particular night, my friend Paul, who is Russian Orthodox, recommended Live Not by Lies. He explained that the book is about how Christians in the Soviet bloc resisted totalitarianism in order to survive communism. Some short time later, Yoshi, a member of our synagogue, recommended the same book to me, and I can take a hint. In any case, I was interested in the subject already because it reminds me of some of the most important books I have ever read. The story of Richard and Sabina Wurmbrand, for example, the founders of Voice of the Martyrs. The Brother Andrew stories, especially God's Smuggler. Brother Yun's The Heavenly Man, and similar titles, including several books about Russian Orthodox dissidents. These are the kinds of Christian stories our children need to be reading and that we need to be reading as well. Not to mention the shelves of books and stories about Jewish heroism under communism, behind the Iron Curtain, where Jews struggled to keep Judaism alive, or under Hitler, or under church persecution, and before that, under Roman persecution, all the way back to Egypt. Such stories matter because they remind us of who we are, people of faith, people of the book, and a people who know that friendship with the world is enmity with God. We lose our way when we fail to distinguish ourselves from the world, that is, from the broader culture. That is how you lose your identity, your faith, and ultimately how we lose our children to secularism and godlessness. So I thought, sure, I'll give it a read. Moreover, I was already reading articles by the same author in the Free Press, where Rod Dreher, a Christian conservative and fierce critic of American leftism, was also warning about the rise of neo-Nazism within segments of the American right. The articles had titles like, "The Radical Right is Coming for Your Sons," "The Threat of the Radical Right," "The Intersectionality of Nick Fuentes," "J.D. Vance and the Groypers." So Dreher has been sounding the alarm about the groundswell of Nazism and anti-Semitism, and about the descent toward madness that some young conservatives are pursuing. He is saying things our elected officials will not dare to say. They do not dare call out anti-Semitism and anti-Zionism as the cancer that it is, rotting away the center that has traditionally stood for family values. Dreher is a convert from Catholicism to Eastern Orthodoxy, and he is deeply concerned with the survival of the Christian faith. He believes a time of persecution is coming, indeed, that it is already here, through cancel culture, political correctness, and a growing rush toward collectivism. In Live Not by Lies, he writes about the cultural amnesia that has brought us to this moment, and his message is simple: get ready to resist. Not through insurrection, but through sacrifice. Even if that resistance means being canceled, marginalized, or arrested, do not capitulate to totalitarianism, political correctness, wokeism, or groupthink, because if you do, you will sacrifice your faith. To remain a people of faith, he argues, we need to begin now to build an underground. This is entirely in keeping with the teaching of Yeshua in Matthew 10, "Be innocent as doves, but wise as serpents." It's a great book, so I thought, let's see what else he's written. That is when I noticed the title, "The Benedict Option: A Strategy for Christians in a Post-Christian Nation," a book from 2017. The very title Rabbi Resnick had recommended to me a year and a half earlier. Naturally, my curiosity was piqued. Why had Rabbi Resnick wanted me to read this book? He had said that our community reminded him of what Dreher describes in The Benedict Option. So what does that mean? Rod Dreher's The Benedict Option argues that we are witnessing the unraveling of Western civilization. Classical liberalism, he suggests, has turned in on itself, and the world as we know it is rapidly reordering. Christians, in the contemporary United States, now live within a culture indifferent, if not openly hostile, to traditional Christian beliefs and moral commitments. Western society has shifted from a broadly Christian moral consensus to a post-Christian reality in which secularism predominates and religious norms no longer shape public life. In this new world, there will be little room for people of faith and religious conviction. But Dreher has a plan. He reminds the reader, this is not the first time this has happened. He points us back to the fall of the Christian Roman Empire, when something very similar unfolded. As barbarian invasions overran the Western world, civilization descended into what we now call the Dark Ages. Yet Christianity and Western literacy survived largely due to the monastic example of Saint Benedict of Nursia, whose communities helped preserve the Christian faith, learning, and literature amid the collapse of the Roman world. The monks withdrew from the mainstream and sequestered themselves in small, tight-knit communities dedicated to practicing their faith through prayer, discipline, and learning. They hand-copied the texts, the scriptures, theological works, and the broader literature of the Western world, preserving far more than they could have known at the time. Dreher does not mention it, but there is an excellent book on this subject by Thomas Cahill, How the Irish Saved Civilization, which deserves a place on the same reading list along with Cahill's Gifts of the Jews. In a nutshell, Dreher's The Benedict Option proposes that modern believers cultivate intentional countercultural small communities that embody and faithfully transmit the Christian faith. He advocates that believers build small, robust, localized communities, neighborhood-based communities of faith rooted in liturgical prayer, ancient religious traditions, and mutual accountability that are capable of sustaining faith and preserving religious identity amid cultural pressure, secularism, and ultimately social collapse. He argues that if we are to survive, we must form intentionally counterculture communities or risk losing all of our children to assimilation. In Dreher's assessment, evangelicalism and seeker-sensitive churches are utterly incapable of meeting this challenge. Dreher wants to see Christian communities that practice traditions handed down from earlier generations. Such traditions often make little sense except as acts of discipline. This is simply what we do here. And what we do it because discipline forms us. He wants to see Christian communities that prioritize liturgical prayer over emotionalism and pop culture worship music because liturgy creates a legacy that is enduring, reinforcing, and unifying. He wants to see Christian communities that teach their children about heroes of the faith, scholars, and inspirational figures from previous generations, the kind of formation he observed modeled so effectively in Orthodox Jewish communities. And he wants to see these communities develop at the neighborhood level, with real human interconnectedness, strengthening families, cultivating deep local involvement, and establishing separate schools and special educational initiatives. That means pulling out of public schools shaped by progressive sexual values and agendas, replacing them with schools that are robust in religious and classical education, schools that teach literacy, scripture, and disciplined thinking. He also emphasizes breaking with a culture of immodesty by unashamedly dressing differently than the surrounding world. It quickly became clear to me what Rabbi Resnick meant when he said that Beth Emanuel Messianic Synagogue reminded him of a Benedict Option community. As he makes his case, Dreher repeatedly points to the Orthodox Jewish community as the model of what this kind of life looks like when it is actually lived in the modern world. It's as if it was written to describe us, who we are, and what we do here, like a mission statement. In that regard, it makes sense of the journey and our involvement here, I would say, especially if you are not Jewish. Both of Dreher's books address the cultural conflict between Judeo-Christian values and the progressive values of the left, which have now been institutionalized at nearly every level of society. Benedict Option recommends building synagogue-style communities. Live Not by Lies urges us to prepare to resist. But now, I think he's working toward a new title. In a recent comment in the Free Press, when asked what he learned in 2025, he said, "I learned that my side, the political right, could become as crazy as the woke left, especially on the matter of the Jews. Yeah, I knew there were anti-Semites on the right and other radicals, including conspiracy nuts, but I thought they were pretty much contained on the fringes. Nope. Shame on me for being surprised. As I've been saying for years, all the basic conditions Hannah Arendt said are present in a pre-totalitarian society are with us in America. A kind of totalitarian thinking long ago conquered the left and its institutions with wokeness. I thought all we on the right had to do was defeat wokeness, and we'd be okay. I was wrong. For the last 6 weeks, I've been devouring books about 1920s Germany. People like to joke darkly about Weimar America. But the more I learn from history, the less amusing it seems." Rod Dreher, The Free Press. Here's the thing I find remarkable. 23 years ago, we did not see any of this coming. Not here. Not in America. Not in the West. Not even in places like Australia or Ireland. But it connects with something I've been turning over in my mind for the last several months about my future involvement in this community. For several years now, I've been asking what my ongoing role in this community should be, and I have even suggested more than once that I might be on my way out. It might be time for me to step aside and pass the torch. In the last few months, I've come to the opposite conclusion. I am doubling down. because we are in this together. We are facing an existential concern for our faith, perhaps for our lives and the lives of our children, our children's children. At the same time, we have arrived at a moment of opportunity. Perhaps God has put us here for such a time as this. Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.